Well, good evening, everybody. I declare the General Council meeting open. We begin by acknowledging the Kaurna people and their traditional lands. We respect their elders past and present. I'd like to also make an acknowledgement, if I get this name right, of the Southern Echo Venturers Unit, otherwise known as the Local Scouts, the 14 to 18-year-old age group, and they're most welcome. I've given them a full briefing on what might happen, and I'm sure they're therefore expecting any number of surprises for the time they're here, and they're very welcome. I advise everyone that the meeting is taped so that the audio can be publicly available. Do any elected members foresee any potential conflict of interest with any item on the agenda? Councillor Pfeiffer.
Just the Garrock nomination that I'll step out of the room for, Your Worship.
Very good. Anyone else? Then I'll keep going. Down to committee recommendations on... confirmation of minutes on page 5. Would someone like to confirm? Councillor Hutchinson moved. Seconded Councillor Duncan. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Committee recommendations. They could be done...
Point of order.
Yes, a point of order, Councillor Hull.
We skipped through a couple of agenda items, Mr Mayor. I have 3,500 petitions to present tonight.
Councillor Hull, I hadn't been advised of any petitions, but I...
Well, you were invited to the event, Mr Mayor.
No, I correct you. I have not been advised of any petitions to be presented this evening. That's why they're not on the agenda. But I'll just ask Governance whether there's any issue with that being presented at the meeting.
Through the Chair, the committee, the petitions can be presented and received, but we'll have to come back to the following council meeting.
So you mean, Ms McKenzie, they can be administratively received tonight and then they can be properly noted at the next meeting because they will need to be on the agenda. So would you like to bring them up to Ms McKenzie? Thanks, Councillor Hull. And I'll just keep going on, and that those petitions can be noted next time, and that way they can be very artistic, they can be duly counted and so forth. Committee recommendations, they could be taken on block. The Finance and Audit Committee and the Review and Selection Committee meeting minutes. Moved, Councillor. A question, let's have the question first, Councillor Crossland.
So just a question on the Finance Committee meeting notes. I noticed that the amount that goes to the CFPP was adjusted by the Finance Committee. Am I reading that right? It just reads like we can reduce it. I just want to know what the procedure is and whether or not the $500,000 that we put in the budget will still be going to the CFPP.
Of course, you're quite right that the committee itself can't adjust that amount, but did you have a page reference so we can all have a look at that? And then I'll ask Mr. Mifsud to comment, but it does help if we're all looking at it.
My page 30.
Yes, I see the top of page 30 saying that the contribution to the CFPP fund has been reduced. Now, that refers only to the draft budget. That's the way I understand it. But if I could have Mr. Mifsud to comment, please.
Through the Chair, yes, that's correct. So the Finance and Audit Committee can only provide information and make recommendations to Council. They have no authority whatsoever to alter any financial data at all.
So my question is, Mr. Mifsud, so does this regularly happen? Because my understanding was when we committed to put $500,000 into the CFPP, that's what would be delivered?
Through the Chair, so members may recall at the beginning of last year that Council decided to ensure a balanced cash budget, and I emphasise cash budget, that if we needed to balance it up because it was in a minor deficit, that that would come from the CFPP, and Council decided to do that last year.
So, and just to, if I can add to that, Councillor Crossland, when we had a discussion about budget at our planning day late January, my understanding was that the CFPP amount was in a sense being used as a balancing item, but it is only a draft, and in March, well, is it next week we're having an informal discussion to refine those points. So that figure, I think what you're pointing out is that is entirely subject to decision. It is not a fixed figure at this point.
Yeah, no, that was fine, and I do understand that it was a balancing figure, but I couldn't understand why we were reducing the amount and then declaring a surplus of 795, which I think, was that not in the second quarter, or am I mistaken?
No, through the Chair, this is talking about the draft budget for next year, not the current year's budget.
Lovely, thank you.
Any other questions on either of the committee minutes, Councillor Hull?
Mr. Mayor, it was remiss of me when I presented that petition, particularly for the benefit of the gallery, that was in relation to the efforts of our community to save the Marion Cultural Centre from a hotel.
Is it noted at the next meeting?
No, I just thought it's just for the benefit of the scouts in particular, so they might have been curious to know what that was all about. Mr. Mayor.
Yes, you have a question about the committee minutes?
Yeah, page 24. Mr. Mayor, the elected members report, where it states Council agreed that the preferred site for the BMX project in Majors Road, so on and so forth, that paragraph.
Yes.
I think that we need to be very, very clear and very careful about how we communicate that to our community, because the way that that reads is not really out of keeping with the resolution. But other material that I've read suggests that we're actually locked into that option one. And as members know, that's not the case. And we only create community expectation and particularly convey the wrong message to our partner, being the City of Onkaparinga. So we just need to be careful, I think, in any of our communications about any major project, but particularly this one, which has been flip-flopping around from one site to the other. So I think that we should just make the appropriate announcement at the appropriate time, Mr. Mayor, if we actually are doing great deeds for our community with this project or any other one.
That's a fair point about communicating such major decisions in minutes which are not literally reflective of resolutions of Council. There is a danger in that. Ms. McKenzie, what do we do if we actually think it's inaccurate when we come to look at these minutes?
Through the Chair, if we think it's inaccurate, then we can note it in the acceptance of the minutes at the meeting now and have it recorded accurately.
Well, perhaps with leave of the meeting, if Councillor Hull's expression of concern could be noted in relation to the precise wording of significant decisions when they're referred to in the minutes, then it draws it to the attention of the committee when they look at it next time. Would you be happy with that, Councillor Hull?
Right. For the record, I voted in favour of that project.
Yeah,
spoiler.
All right, if there's no objection, let's do that. It only needs to be in those general terms. While that's being sorted, I need to go back to deputations, although deputations is nil, as marked in the agenda, I'm obliged to place on the record any reasons for refusal, and I have refused a deputation to tonight's meeting in relation to residents who wish to note their objection to the plans for an ice rink. And I wrote back to them, in essence suggesting that their submissions would be premature and that there will certainly be consultation if and when Council proceeds with such a development. So if that could be recorded in the minutes, that's not optional, something of that nature does need to be requested. Okay, that'll do. That's not a motion, it's simply to be recorded in the minutes. Now, I get to the committee minutes. We had a comment that was noted. If there aren't any more questions, would someone like to move that both of those sets of minutes are confirmed? Councillor Telfer, seconded Councillor Duncan. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we come to some confidential items, and with apologies to members of the gallery, I hope you've found this illuminating so far, but we now clear out members of the public and staff who aren't involved in these matters. If indeed council votes to go into confidence, so I ask members to turn to page 36. So I'm just having a difficulty with my agenda because I don't have a page 36. So I presume people would want to move into conference for that. So would someone like to move the confidential motion? Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Telfer. All those in favour? Carried unanimously, so I'm afraid we do go into confidence. And
text that's gone on involved in this, we endorse that this goes into the city management asset management plan and is prioritised accordingly. But in number four, I believe this is written in number four as though it's the only solution. I believe it's 700,000. It's not the only solution. And I've also put up a fifth, which is a suggestion that we look at environmental things, environmental solutions along the way. And in explaining this, I'm really quite horrified. I think of car parks in terms of $100,000, because at one stage that was what we paid for the Club Marion car park. And usually you times projects by pi, and in this case we times it by seven. 700,000 to cover what was originally bowling club land or bowling rink land, and now car park with asphalt. That area is higher, the middle stretch is much lower, the road is higher. I cannot believe that we cannot come up with some better solutions in terms of there's a replacement of pumps and trying to get the whole of the land so that the water flows down to the gutter. I would like to see a lot more emphasis on water retention onto the current bowling rinks, the grasses in the front, the memorial area. I know that it rains in winter and not in summer, but I'm not comfortable with just saying that this is the only design at 700,000. So I believe that when it is looked at, city property and strategic asset management plan, they need to be able to interrogate this appropriately. And so that's why I've included that extra sentence in there.
Fair enough. It's not inconsistent with the rest of the motion, really. And I do note that it does say up to $700,000, so you would hope that it's less. Is that seconded? Question before it's seconded, Councillor Crossley.
Telfer's point, that's a lot of money for a car park, and they've managed with the car park as is for many years. I believe there are more solutions. Do we actually need point four in there? Because it's sort of number three says that it's going to be strategic asset management plan?
In a sense, it's just a progress report. It's one of these that was going to come back to us sometime, and really staff are saying, we've costed it, we've looked at a design, but we're going to wait until we've done the strategic asset management plan and come back to you. But that's a good question. Why do we have item clause 4 in there at this point? Ms. Dixon.
Through the chair, point 4 could be removed. At this stage, it is an estimation, hence up to 700,000, but we can remove it if council wishes to.
And I'm happy to second it if that's removed, because I think the whole process will be a future report, not this one, and this sort of gives an expectation we're going to spend 700,000 in the future. And it's quite clear in the report without it being in the resolution.
Yeah, Councillor Telfer, are you happy to move that in an amended form?
I'm comfortable with 3 and 4 going out, and we will continue to work.
Oh, it's just one clause that Councillor Crossland was talking about.
Are you leaving the environment?
That leaves yours in. It's really just a progress report.
I'm more comfortable with that. I don't want to say that we have just the solution that is in our agenda up. I believe that we need to keep teasing this out and working at it to get some better solutions. So, yes, I concur with that. I'm happy to withdraw that for
So that's
that.
Moved. Can we say moved, Councillor Telfer? Seconded, Councillor Crossland? Keep it simple. Anyone speaking against? Councillor Hull?
Just a question. Given that we're applying water-sensitive urban design principles to some of our streetscaping, can in particular to point 4, can we actually use the same principles on a car park?
Well, I think that's what Councillor Telfer was getting at, really, by suggesting it in that way. Of course, it can be done.
I'd be really interested to hear Mr. Ricketts' outlook on that as part of what comes back in that report.
All right, let's wait and see what comes back. There'll obviously be further consideration. If there's no one speaking against, I'll simply put the motion. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we're on to page... page 49, I think. Now, I do have a question with staff to begin with. I'm sorry I didn't follow up this up earlier, but had I not already written as Mayor to the Minister of Transport about pedestrian rail crossing? No one's aware of that? Anyone? Don't know if anyone can check the extranet while we're here, but I thought I might have done that earlier in the year. But anyway, I suppose we go with it as is. The other question I've got about this is that when Councillor Telfer and I inspected the potential site for the Tonsley Greenway, I asked the question about why we had to do this now, given that there's some question marks about the route. And I believe the issue is that there's funding for the Greenway to commence further south, and that it was therefore sensible timing. I don't know, Mr. Lyons, can you help with that?
Through the chair, Ms. Dixon and I will take that question on notice.
All right, I'm starting to think it might be better to defer this item. Councillor Telfer.
I'd like to move this item because we are not coming up with, if I speak to it, we're not coming up with solutions. All we're saying is we've looked at Hamilton, that's not worked. We are going back to the Minister of Transport saying the crossing from the northern part of the new Tonsley Village across to Kira Avenue is really important, and we will come up with further solutions later. We do note that in the general analysis where there's a table, the third line talks about the Tonsley precinct, Ash Avenue to Alawuna Avenue, and that timing construction is, the design is now and the timing construction is next year, and that's Renewal SA's responsibility. Obviously, if they're designing the path that goes along there, it's got to stop somewhere and cross across onto Kira and Woodlands so that it can go further north. There's not much point having something to the east of the line that gets to the end of the Renewal SA land and just stops. So we do need a link across so that we can proceed on north to make any sense of this whole route.
The other question I have about... Thank you, Councillor Telfer. I'll come back to Councillor Pfeiffer in a moment. The other question I have about this is that regardless of the question mark about the route between Tonsley and Dawes Road, aren't we agreed on a route from Dawes Road to the existing Merino to City bikeway? In which case, why wouldn't we start work on the northern part of it? Is that just not economical? Or why not start budgeting for that?
Could I just comment on that?
I'll just see if there's a... Oh, no, you go ahead and then we'll hear from administration. Councillor Telfer.
Well, my answer would be that on page 52, if you have a look on those maps, there are possibilities, purple, red, green, yellow and blue. So it really depends on where that middle section goes, what you do to the north of Dawes Road.
Well, Councillor Telfer, you and I and Mr Lyons... at least met to discuss the various options, and I thought we agreed that what appears on the map as purple and red and green lines weren't the optimum routes and that it would end up being the blue or the yellow. Now, if that's right, then West Street should become a bikeway no matter what happens. That was the point of my question. But let's hear from Mr. Lyons.
Through the chair, I wasn't actually at that meeting. It may have been maybe one of the city activation people. This discussion was held at a forum in February. Members may recall that. The outcome of that forum discussion was that alignment 3 was the preferred at that point, ahead of alignment 4 and 5. We heard that the Hamilton High School wasn't happy to have the route through their proximity and that the next action on Alignment 3 was to write to the Minister, as suggested in the recommendation, to seek approval for a rail crossing. And that's essentially the outcome of this report.
Thanks, Mr. Sorry to have misplaced you at that meeting, but it's just frustrating when we have a meeting, staff take away the ideas, and then they're completely wiped from memory in the report that comes to Council. But we have a motion that's moved. Councillor Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, I'll second that. I mean, at this point in time, we really need to know what's getting developed where by the State Government and up until what point and what we're joining on to before we can kind of join onto it and finish off the route. Now, noting what you said, Your Worship, I think realistically West Street is, in my mind, probably 95% certain the route you'd probably be needed to take, but it all kind of hinges on exactly where the State Government is dropping the end of the path, really. So, and noting that the green, looking at page 52 there, the green dotted line is all proposed off-street shared use path, so until it stops being proposed and starts being a little bit more certain, it's hard for us to really definitely pick it up and run with it.
Getting closer to tracking down a letter to the Minister in the in our vast storage of records. Councillor Hull?
Deferment motion, Mr. Mayor, for all the reasons that you were concerned about before. Let's let's see the document that you seek that you may not have written to the minister, and all the other information that hasn't been answered here tonight. I think that a deferment...
It's a procedural motion?
It is, yeah.
To come back in May? It's best to put a date with these things.
The last meeting in April, please.
I think we only have one meeting in April, and it's not in the last half. I beg your pardon? It is in the last half, so the meeting in April would be suitable. It's a procedural motion, so we need to deal with it immediately. Is it seconded? Councillor Crossland? All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously, so we'll come back in May with that. Just as a matter of interest, did we get that letter? Or? All right. If it comes through, we'll have it emailed to members. I thought it might be on the extranet. I know that it's been raised with the new chief executive of the Department of Transport by Mr. Scull and myself recently. We'll check if there's a letter to the minister as well.
Do you mind if I ask a quick question? In terms of the crossing into Tonsley, can we actually find correspondence relating to that as well?
Councillor Hull, can you take it up with staff after the meeting? We really have moved on. Page 53, we're after call for nominations to the GAROC. No, we're not. It's the Local Government Strategic Roads Committee. I haven't heard of any expressions of interest from this group. Anyone? Councillor Hull, would you like to move? I guess you can't move if your name's going to be on it, but you're suggesting it to others, are you? You will have to leave if you want that motion moved. Very well. Councillor Pfeiffer? You don't have to just because he's left the room. All right. Seconded Councillor Pryor. And I think we're all going to get behind him on this one. Anyone speaking against? No, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Invite Councillor Hull back in. No need to rush. Right. Election of GAROC representatives. So... Members are aware that the Local Government Association has restructured its governance so that there are two bodies which then help to form the LGA board itself. There is a metropolitan and a country group. The metropolitan group is called Greater Adelaide, something or other committee, known as GAROC, rather than GAROC, I'm informed. But as you please, we're quite open-minded about it here. So we're asking members to vote. I love voting. I get to vote as well. You can vote, or you should vote for at least two. That's our usual voting practice, isn't it? Because there are two positions to be filled. You can go further if you wish, but one and two ought to do it. Now, in terms... Sometimes members ask my opinion about these things because I have more to do with other mayors and people on other councils than some other members, at least. I suppose the principles that I go by, first of all, looking after your own, there's Deputy Mayor Pfeiffer's on the list, so that's the first principle, look after your own. Second principle is look after your neighbours, and that narrows it down a bit, as you can see. Third principle I follow is you don't want someone who's completely new to local government. And fourth principle I follow is that when in doubt, vote for a woman. But that's entirely up to members. I'm just sharing my views. But if you follow my principles, there's actually only one other contender. But it's a free country. And members, I'd ask you to just vote. And
thank you, Chair. Can I get a page number from you, Councillor?
Page 100. You've got the year to date Increase in employee costs 4.9%. And page 99, you've got our full-time equivalent staff numbers showing
well below budget, but do we have the closest we have is we've got 355 total staff numbers 31st December 2018. Do we have handy the figure for 1 year before that? On page 100, sorry. That's got the year to year. So that's actually a drop in employee numbers from the year before. Is that correct?
That is
correct. Yeah, right. So, Mr. Scott, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. In response to the total employee cost, the projection of 4.9% doesn't look favourable and doesn't look satisfactory against the KPI. We are strongly, vigorously managing that, and replacement of people who leave is being held up, and we're watching the staffing numbers assiduously, and I'm very confident that we'll come within the core target there of employee cost increases. In fact, I've made a promise of that happening to the Review and Selection Committee. And I apologise, your other question about FTE?
Yeah, just my belief was that we are slowly increasing our staff numbers, and I think we were down at 340. I know that the numbers that we keep getting are fairly rubbery, but my interpretation is staff numbers have been going up, and just wondered why that was, especially when we've got an overrun on budget for staff costs.
I have to say, Councillor Crossland, the numbers that we're presented with actually show reduction in total number of FTE employees movement on prior year.
Go back another year.
They were massively up the year before.
Is what we're trying to work out is what's causing all these big fluctuations, and is that influencing the 4.9% overrun in budget?
Well, no, not for this year. And what we're concentrating on is the total employee cost. I'm trying to run the business so that I work within the budget that I've got for the staff that we've got, rather than having a focus on FTE, even though I know that there's an interest in that. It could be that we increase the FTE, but with less expensive people, and we come within the employee cost number. And that's my focus, because that's the KPI. There are times when we do need to put more people on, and I won't do that if it's going to increase the total employee cost. I know that flies in the face of the 4.9 projected increase, but I'm very confident that once we get the third quarter numbers, that you'll see that we're well within the KPI. There have been some times when I've come to you and have said that I need certain people, and one of them that springs to mind is we needed a GIS operator, and I've got permission to do that as an FTE addition, but not with at the same time exceeding the employee cost. So if that makes sense, my focus in running this business with the executive team is that we don't exceed that KPI of spending more money than the anticipated increase.
Other questions? Councillor Gard, then Councillor Telfer.
Yes, I wanted to put this question partly for the interest of our young gallery tonight, and that is concerning the amount of projects that we're starting to conceive and in fact are in, the fact that we have been taking a whole new look at the way we conduct our business with asset management, the buildings, the roads, etc., watching for where the improvements should be and in what timeliness they should be. I was interested in the CEO's comment as to a matching between the automation aspects of our business where we might expect greater efficiencies. And I noticed one at the audit and efficiency meeting just recently where there was an outstanding presentation of the new automation or data and controls within the project management side of things. It was absolutely fascinating and an excellent presentation.
So, Councillor Gard, could you hone that to a fine point of a question?
Yes, Your Worship. My fine point really is, blow for blow, are we keeping pace in the sense of our moving forward in automation and modernisation of how we run our business, less labour intensive in certain areas? Are we keeping pace with the general pace of development of the City of Marion? So, or are we going to be expecting some steady increases in human resources in order to fulfil the latter, being the development that we're moving towards?
Through you, Your Worship, I would anticipate over the years that we would have more automation and fewer staff numbers. And an example of that is the work that we're doing in open space, which will show that we are able to do the same amount of work, in fact more, but with fewer staff going forward. And I think that's going to be the case for any organisation that you talk with, that their efficiency gains through automation, artificial intelligence, that's going to come into our world, and in the future their jobs will be very different. I'd anticipate 5 to 10 years that you'll see a very different climate. So in answer to your question, I can't see any savings for project management, but I certainly can in a number of areas where we're working across borders and we're looking at efficiencies in our systems.
Councillor Telfer.
My question relates to page 96, number 2, and 98, number 2, the delivery of agreed projects identified in the business plan. So for quarter two, we have that we've achieved 93% and that some are off track, five are off track. Is it predicted of these 73 projects that we're working on at the moment that by the end of the year we would be back on track to the core target, or are they seriously so off track that it's likely that going forward we won't get across that line?
Through Your Worship, we track this very hard every month. Every director has, and every manager, in fact, has got to focus on those exceptions. So we do exception reporting against our work area plans, and we're confident that we'll meet the target. Not all of them are going to be finished by the end of the financial year, but they're actually noted down as being, you know, projects that will go over the end of the financial year anyway. So a simple answer to your question, Councillor Telfer, is yes, we're expecting to meet the target, and we're very conscious of those red lines.
Councillor Telfer.
The other one is on the same page. Page 97. The delivery of the Capital Works Program, where it says we can't tell you how we're going until the end of the year because this is an annual measure. Do we get any tips on how our Capital Works are going?
Through Your Worship, we actually report regularly on this to Council, and the Project Control Group looks at the Capital Works progress. You know, there's various categories, if you recall, and you see the graph, and it is an annual measure. I think we're going better than ever in the history of Marion, of which I've been involved against Capital Works. But I'll probably ask Mr. Lyons to report on whether we're achieving our goal of Capital Works achievement, but I'm very comfortable personally and from the Project Control Group meetings that we have every month.
Through the Chair, we do have a monthly meeting, a project control group that meets. We've had 3 years of year-on-year reductions in carryovers, and I've said that a number of times, and it's so pleasing every time we say that. This year's not going to be any different. So this year will be the fourth year in a row that we have a reduction in carryovers. I can say that for the first time in all of those 4 years, we will have zero carryovers in our vehicles, which is a massive achievement. I know of two of my larger projects that will have carryovers, but they will still be less than last year's.
Councillor Valesco.
Just in regards to staff, it's good that we're looking to work within budget, and obviously it's good that we've acknowledged that there has been a slight overrun, but we're working to reduce that. However, what are we doing to avoid problems by not being able to hire staff? So, for example, are there some capacity issues or some skill issues within the organisation that if we had more flexibility, we could actually save money in other areas? So if we, you know, spend an extra $100,000, we'd actually save the organisation in other avenues more than that $100,000. So are we looking at that as well, and is that a problem?
Mr. Scull?
Through your worship, it's a great question. If we're going to run this organisation efficiently, we have to look at opportunities and the return on that investment. So we watch staffing numbers regularly at the ELT, and we're always looking out for opportunities to save and to employ people who can do better for us. We're achieving great results in the work that we're doing with Port Adelaide and Charles Sturt, as an example of this, by employing people together, for example, procurement, to save in each individual constituent council. So it's certainly part of the way we're working. And I think we have to in today's environment.
If there are no more questions, I think we can put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. And now, with leave of the council, we'll go back to the election of GAROC representatives item. I'm pleased to inform you that in first place with that voting was our very own Deputy Mayor, Mr. Pfeiffer. And in terms of second place, it was very, very close between our neighbouring women mayors, but by one vote, Mayor Holmes-Ross of Mitcham came in second. So that ballot paper will be forwarded to the LGA accordingly. If someone will be kind enough to move the motion accordingly with our votes. Councillor Valescu, seconded Councillor Masika. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we jump forward again. To development plan amendment status update. Now this was, I might ask Mr. Malhewish to come forward. This was quite deliberately an item which might engender some general discussion, so I'll be quite flexible in the debate about it. But I considered, especially for the new members of council, it was important to take stock about the discussions we've had in the past about our planning rules and those where we're waiting to hear from the minister, for example, and those which may be the subject of further consideration. So perhaps this is one where, Mr. Malhewish, you might want to give us an outline of, I suppose, an update in terms of DPA's development plan amendments that we're waiting for, where we're waiting for an outcome, and then we'll go from there. Thank you. A presentation?
Well, it's just a marked up plan of the council area which might show.
That would be useful. So there's a marked up plan of the council. It's easier to have a visual guide, I'm sure. Just while we're getting that ready, obviously the one we're probably most anxiously awaiting is the response of the Minister for Planning to our housing density DPA, which we call the housing diversity DPA, aimed at cutting back some of the infill in the northern areas of the city and making other changes, which was delivered to the minister just before Christmas 2017. I've spoken to the minister about it. He's assured me 6 months ago and more recently just a few weeks ago that it was getting very close to being signed off. And we hope we'll get a result soon. So I don't know if you've got a rotate button there. Yes, very good. Mr. Malhewish, your summary. Thank you.
Would you like to start, through Chair, would you like to start with the Housing Diversity DPO? Or,
I have mentioned that. Yes, please start with that, and then maybe just very briefly take us through any updates. Obviously, we've read what you have in the report, but any updates or how long you anticipate we have to wait for outcomes on the others that are outstanding? Thank you.
Through the Chair, the Housing Diversity DPA, as you've said, I think we're just waiting on the state government on that one. Do you want actually a background on where the DPA came from? Or?
Well, look, most of us are aware, but if you could be extremely brief for the benefit of the new members, that, right. that would be useful. Thanks. Well,
if you went back 5 years ago or so, councillors, part of the strategic directions report, which they have to do every 5 years, looks at where they might be able to maybe amend their development plan. As part of that, we had five or six individual DPAs that related to residential. Some were for reducing densities in certain areas, some were for increasing densities in other areas, and that included the south. But what we thought we'd do, because we had half a dozen DPAs, development plan amendments for residential purposes, we decided we'd put them all together so we could have some kind of balanced DPA going through that could show where areas were going to be reduced in density and other areas where they were going to be increased in density, so you can have a look at it spatially, but also the actual numbers could balance out. So we ended up with six that we amalgamated, if you like, or put together, and we came out with the Housing Diversity DPA. I think probably more down to just questions on that one. The last time I heard from DIPT was before Christmas, and the officer dealing with the DPA mentioned that they were still going through the assessment of it. So what happens is that the DIPT will actually look at it. They'll make recommendations to the minister. Sometimes they'll actually come back to council again and ask us to provide some clarification. We had that early last year where we had to provide some clarification, but they might come back again. If not, they'll provide a report to the minister and suggesting one way or the other, and then it's up to the minister. There could be certain sections of the DPA that they're more comfortable with than others. I'm just throwing everything out there that they will allow. There are other parts of the DPA that they might think, well, we've still got questions, so they might want to actually continue through with the, there's a new planning system coming out in the next year or two. They may decide to keep that those components of it for the new planning system. It's all up in the air at the moment, and we'll find out from DIPT at some stage.
Does any member have any questions? We'll just take questions about that one in particular. Councillor Pryor?
Just a quick one. Yeah, if the minister comes back and says, I accept all the higher density areas and I reject all the lower density areas, what is council's recourse there?
That's a good question, because the minister generally has the final say on it.
But Mr. McHugh, isn't it the case that the minister can simply come out with a fixed response, that's it, that's the edict, that's the plan we get? That's the case, isn't it?
That is the case, but I'd like to think that if DIPT had were already thinking along that line, they'd probably, what I'd like to think that they will come to council first to discuss it with us, just to see if there's any, I don't know, leeway.
All right, other questions just on that one? Councillor Hutchinson?
Just for the purposes of the meeting, could staff just remind us that this was the same DPA that had to be in by Christmas 2017 to be approved by March 2018?
Yes, it was. Things have changed a little bit since then. The new planning system that is being pushed through at the moment is actually further behind than it was. What they were intending was that there wouldn't be any more DPAs from any council lodged after December 2017. With the new minister coming in, that has been changed, and they will allow new DPAs to be lodged this year, as long as you can prove that they'll actually be finalised by the end of the year. So the time's running short on that.
Councillor Telfer, Councillor Gard, Councillor Pryor, Councillor Telfer.
Are staff aware that at a training session for elected members given by the Commissioner of Planning, the assurance was given that they would look at our plan first and convert it into the core book modules secondly?
I think that's the way they intend to do it. If there's a DPA in the system, if they can actually get it through, they will. If it looks as if it's going to need a lot more work, then they will probably push it through in the new planning system.
And a subsidiary question. If that is so, and we have a DPA sorted to some degree or a response from the department, when it gets into the core books, could it be modified, pushed down, varied to fit into the core modules of the book as such?
Are you suggesting that
when they have their core book for the whole of the state, would we be compromised or pushed into things at that point?
For example, if there's a low density or a medium density module, that the frontages, etc., that we've come up with might be squashed into that preordained mould?
I guess that anything is possible, but the idea is that councils will be with each individual council to ensure that if there's any local characteristics that they want to retain, they'll certainly take that on board. The idea is, like at the moment, there's the South Australian Planning Policy Library where there are dedicated zones and policy areas. They are trying to reduce the number of zones, so they will be taking probably more control over what goes in those zones and policy areas, but there will still be the opportunity for each council, if they can prove that there's particular areas that should be different from what they've proposed, to actually take that opportunity.
Councillor Gard.
Your Worship, some of the feedback that I seem to recall a few months ago, either leaking or coming out of DIPT regarding disagreement with certain aspects of our DPAs seems to conflict with your statement about the Minister signing off, as it were, and in terms of expedience versus perhaps more consultation. Did you sort of get a feel that it could be as blunt as a sign-off and that's that?
I suspect that's what I strongly suspect that's what we're facing, and the minister's been very close, had his hand poised for about the last 6 months. It's that close. Councillor Pryor, you pass. Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, in terms of the urgency of this, I'll ask a question. How long ago did Council first identify there was a need to change the DPA?
Sorry, can you clarify, when you say change the DPA?
When did the elected members suggest that we embark upon the council-wide residential DPA?
I think that was back in, started around about 2016, I think.
2016.
16, 17, yeah.
Okay, so we're 3 years later, we're none more progressed. The point that I'm making, Mr. Mayor, is that during the election, I don't know about other members, but I think it was palpable that a lot of ratepayers, rightly or wrongly, were holding councillors responsible for poor development in their streets. Okay, whether it be one house come down and four go up, we were the ones being held responsible. I received quite nasty material in my letterbox about it. And the point that I'm making is that
every day that goes by where the Minister does not sign off on our DPA, it allows abhorrent development to happen in our streets. And the question, the big question I have is, if the Minister signed off tomorrow, that would mean that developers would still be able to apply that development application to the current principles for how many years ahead before there is a termination to their approval? In other words,
they already lodged an application under the prevailing rules, that's what you mean?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So what's the normal cut-off there?
The rule is that when you receive an application, you assess it against the development application of the day. So if it was to be approved tomorrow, anything that's been lodged as of today would be assessed under the current development plan. Generally what happens is that you've got a year to substantially start and 3 years to finish, in other words, which could mean that you've got a year to get building approval and then you've got 2 years after that to actually complete the development. So you've got 3 years. So someone can wait for another year and sometimes they'll apply for an extension of time. But quite often what happens is if the development plan has changed quite dramatically or the zone has changed quite dramatically and we're looking at something totally different in a particular area, we'll take that into consideration and we may not allow that extension of time.
And I suppose that gives rise to two variations. I mean, most people in fact want to complete their home that they've applied for as soon as possible, whether they're a developer or an inhabitant. But the other prospect is that if the zoning was seen to change in a manner that was more favourable from the point of view of the applicant, they could always withdraw and apply again under the new zoning. So it's another variation. Councillor Hutchinson.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just following on from Councillor Hull's point, is it not the case through to the staff that the resi code actually causes you greater challenges in that regard because they are not necessarily assessed in the same way, or they're not, and therefore you're needing to approve certain developments that aren't, well, wouldn't otherwise be desirable in accordance with our plan?
There is the situation, as probably aware, that the residential code came in a few years ago and the criteria within that residential code are generally a lot more lax than in our development plan. Something simple like site coverage in our development plan is generally around about 40%. In the residential code, for a detached or semi-detached dwelling, it's up to 60%. And if it's for a unit development, it can be 70%. So we're up against it straight away. And if it comes in, residential code means it's complying. So if it meets those certain criteria, whether it's areas and site coverage, etc., etc., we've got to approve it. We can't refuse it.
Thank you. So the supplementary through the chair is, wouldn't we be better off actually spending some time on lobbying on the resi code side of things more than chasing up our DPA if we want to affect real change?
With the new planning system that's coming out, I've read a few of their documents so far and it appears that a lot of the criteria that they're now putting into the new planning system, the planning and design code, actually reflects what's in the residential code at the moment. So it appears that state government are actually looking at increasing densities. Our council at 40% is probably one of the lower percentages for site coverage in the metro area. There are lots of others that are up to 50 or 60% already. But it looks as if the state government are trying to push that aspect of it further.
So I take that as, yes, if we wanted to affect real change, we need to be lobbying around the future design.
Well, I think what you'd be doing is lobbying the future residential code, the future design code. Not the residential code as we know it now won't be. What happens at the moment is that the residential code is in the regulations and then we've got our development plan. What they're intending to do is put it in one place and then they'll be complying within the RESI code.
Thank you. Councillor Pryor.
Just a quick one. The 40% counts a driveway?
The driveway, it's only roofed areas that are added into the 40%.
That's why the new houses don't have eaves, so that they don't count the 1 metre edge around the house, no matter how environmentally bad that is.
Yeah, but
is
still,
that a fair comment, Mr. Mulhewish?
I'll leave your comment there.
Somehow meet the 5-star energy rating, though.
Obviously controversial. Councillor Hull?
Mr. Mulhewish, is it possible for a council to somehow request and expect that if you build a house and you have a garage, that you can get the standard SUV into the darn garage? Is there a prospect that we can actually come up with a clear expectation, unequivocal expectation, that you can get a standard SUV? It could be a RAV4 or a Holden.
Did you say a Hull?
Yes. Holden.
Holden. Oh, sorry.
How quickly if it,
Yeah, look, I take the point of the question. I mean, this is something that we explored once before, and the answer that we were given was that there was an Australian standard, I think, 3 metres to a garage width. What can we do about that?
There's Australian standards for heights, widths and lengths, et cetera, minimum for certain types of vehicles. Well, it's not actually for... It's normally classified as the 85 percentile vehicle, which used to be the old Ford Falcon or whatever, but we're guided under the development plan by the Australian standard, so it's hard for us to actually ask for something that's greater than the Australian standards. That's saying one of the big issues I think for a lot of people is the actual the door itself. The width of the garage inside is 3 metres, but sometimes the garage door is only 2.1 or 2.4. But that again is a standard. It's not that we're allowing that. That's the minimum requirement.
So is it reasonable to suggest the council would request that you can actually build a garage where you have to be able to open the doors and exit the vehicle instead of climbing out through the back door? Like, you know, is it possible for us to actually do that? Because I think the community has an expectation that people have homes built with a garage where you can actually open the door and get out of the car.
Yeah, the issue there is that the building code, which is where those standards, or the Australian standards and the building code, are Commonwealth legislation, not state, and, you know, generally, we will have dimensions that are reflective of the Australian standard within development plans. So it's a question whether it's a development plan you should be looking at changing or whether it's the Australian standard itself. The Australian standards maybe need updating because SUVs 5 years ago probably weren't as normal as they are now.
So what I'm thinking, because we know that it is an issue which upsets a lot of our residents, all of these different planning issues, we should book in an informal discussion time at one of our forums and look at not so much changing our DPA, but the areas where, as a group, we want to lobby for change, as chaotic as it might be. You know, the Mayor can fire off a couple of letters to state or federal ministers if need be, and we just need to have that discussion, and that's probably getting beyond the scope of tonight, but we'll come back and do it later in the year. Now, other questions? Councillor Valescu?
A little bit more, and we could explore this in more detail in the forum, but is Council able to actually have a better building rating? So this is a rating that the council itself puts together, that based on having a realistic size, realistic number of parkings for the type of dwelling and the proposed occupants or the likely occupants, a realistic garage width, so it would be beyond the Australian standards, and other things like that. And then actually giving properties that rating. So people are actually interested in a property that isn't going to cause issues or some of these issues that come up, that we actually have that rating. And that could also be a lever to actually pressure those building houses to actually say, well, actually, this is what people want. Because what's happening now is people are buying houses based on location and what they can afford, and it's not what they need. So if we actually reward that, and without going outside of the building code, because that'll take ages to change. So we just put the pressure on that way. Say, this is the ideal house. These are the things that we found the community think is ideal or better. And this house passes the test. This one doesn't. You decide.
Mr. Mel, have you heard of any sort of rating system like that?
Not for the type of issues that Councillor Valescu was talking about. There's obviously rating issues for environmental issues. For heat and things like that, but it's almost like you're saying, something that you're sort of stepping outside of the development plan or the Australian standards, maybe best practice, and it's something that could be explored, but whether you can enforce someone to do it is another question, but at least to introduce it, you might get people thinking about it and seeing what the issues are.
Scores on the doors. Any other questions? Let's move on to another of the plans. I know it takes a while, but this is actually pretty important stuff, so that we're all aware of it. Which one would you like to take next, Mr. Mulhewish?
I'd got the Southern Innovation Area Ministerial DPA, but that's already been authorised.
Parts 1 and 2?
Parts 1 and 2.
Yep.
If members are aware, it's just mainly around the Tonsley Park, the old Mitsubishi site, and the Laffers Triangle, and parts of Darlington. It covers both Mitcham, Marion, and Onkaparinga, and it's sited around the road works that are going through.
And certainly, I mean, that's where we have, I think, in the middle of Tonsley, unlimited height limits. That's a nonsense, isn't it? I mean, no limit to height.
I believe that's correct for the core area. There are transition areas where you get closer to the existing residential, and they're probably more likely to be residential there, and there are transitions down to two stories, three stories.
Mr. Mulhewish, it may not be your area, you're more policy, but are you aware of applications which have commenced in that area to take advantage of the new zoning?
I'm not aware of any large scale. I believe there may be an application in for some large scale development, but I believe we've received applications for some of the smaller scale residential housing part of the peat development.
Oh, that's right. And I mean, people that drive through Tonsley can see that the peat housing is well on the way to construction. What about large scale?
I'm not aware of any large-scale residential at this point in time. We're all aware of the scale of some of the buildings there already. I do believe that Flinders have got a second stage coming through as well. So.
Okay.
Yes. Maybe it's for another time, but can we get a briefing about the significant change there with major retail happening in Tonsley? I'd like to know more about that.
Sure. I think it probably is time for another... Well, by the time we get to it in a few months, it will certainly be time for another Tonsley briefing. And, in fact, we've been invited by Renewal SA to have a meeting on site and have a bit of a tour. So it would be a good opportunity. It's something that the previous council did in virtually their first... one of their first meetings, committee meetings or so on. So we'll pencil that in as well, specifically to deal with Tonsley and, in fact, that whole innovation area, because we can map out for new members the lot 107 on Marion Road,
and other potential developments around the area. Any more questions on that one, or move on? Councillor Pryor?
Just a quick one about Mitchell Park. There's some area there in white in Mitchell Park that wasn't looked at during the Housing Diversity DPA, and it's been excluded from the Southern Innovation DPA. It's just near that the red stripey bit for members. What's happening with that, and is that something we need to address as another DPA going forwards?
No, I think it was decided by council that that white area there, I think it's all pretty much zoned medium density, and I think council were quite comfortable with that being retained for medium density, so it just wasn't touched as part. Medium density zones and the regeneration zones generally weren't touched as part of the Housing Diversity DPA. There were a couple that were taken up with the Marion Plains area, but it was decided that on the eastern side of Marion Road that we'd retain the medium density policy area.
So is that policy area 12? Not 11. I don't think it's 11. Maybe 12, I reckon.
I can't remember off. It's 11 or 12, but it's medium density. It hasn't changed and isn't intended to change.
All right, to move on.
It's sort of arguing about it, yeah.
Which one next? Morpheville Racecourse? What are we waiting on there?
All right, with the Morpheville Racecourse, was a ministerial as well. Originally it was council with West Torrens. The minister's taken it over. The last I heard about that, we had public consultation in 2017, so that was over a year ago, but I think some of the submissions that were received from the public and also some traffic reports were undertaken. And I think a lot of the issues were mainly to do with traffic problems. I think council themselves raised some problems in Plimpton Park, rat running, or potential for further rat running. But I understand that that some of the major intersections, Anzac Highway with Morfitt Road, and particularly the tram crossing, is a cause of concern. So they're seriously looking at those, so fixing those areas up first.
And Mr. Melhuish, I don't know if you've got anything more specific on the answer to the problem that I think council was identifying, which is that there's already a lot of traffic for pretty congested streets around the Plimpton Sports Precinct. So to add potentially hundreds of car trips a day was, you know, likely to cause problems, but it's not easy to see an alternative either. So do you know what the response has been to that?
Not a specific response. When the traffic we asked for a traffic survey to be undertaken for the local roads, and they seem to be suggesting that most people would use Park Avenue and Park Terrace. Sorry, there obviously would be some bleed out to Marion Road off of that, but their traffic models were suggesting they'd use Park Terrace, but I think our engineers weren't sure whether that was actually what was going to happen, so I guess we left the question with Dipti.
Thank you. Well, if there aren't questions there, Lonsdale Residential DPA, this is the odd bit of land. It came up recently when we talked about rezoning, where you've got a little bit of the Onkaparinga Council covering half of this proposed housing development, even though there are no roads directly going back to the city of Onkaparinga, and in fact it's an adjoining industrial zone in any event. So everything is just screaming out for this development plan to be approved and for the boundary to be changed so that the developer can get on with it and you won't have to have rubbish trucks from two different companies driving in there. It would be absurd. What do we know about that, Mr. Melhuish? How far away?
From what I can understand, we were talking to the developers a couple of weeks ago, and their understanding from Dipti is that they're trying to get the DPA out on public consultation by the middle of the year, so around about June. plus or minus. So
it's really hitting the accelerator. Okay, yeah. Great. What about Seacliff Park?
Seacliff Park, since the haulage road is predominantly, or the agreement is predominantly there now, we've started the DPA process off again, and we've had a number of meetings so far with the developer and Holfast Bay Council, and we're looking at a plan to take it forward. What we've got to do is got to go out on public consultation. It was ready for public consultation a number of years ago, but then a few things changed. We had to change the haulage road, etc. So there are some changes required to the development plan that was created a few years ago to include to take the haulage road out of the equation, but to also, as part of the negotiations, there was a bit of land swapping, so the site itself is slightly bigger than it was. So we've just got to take all those things into consideration, amend the development plan to suit, and then we'll put it out on public consultation. Because it's been 3 or 4 years since the minister has seen the former minister previously gave approval for it to go out on public consultation, but we're still waiting to hear from DIPTI. But because there have been some changes over the years, policy, state policy, as well as changes to the actual site area itself, we may have to put it back to the minister just to sign off on it again. We're hoping that won't be the case, but if that is the case, then so be it. But the next major stage is public consultation. Following public consultation, we then change it if we need to again. There's going to have to be infrastructure deeds created, because obviously there's some major infrastructure that's required for that site to be redeveloped, roads, stormwater, etc.
And of course, members will recall just recently that we were saying we would move to have the entirety of the site taken into the city of Marion, and that would have an implication for the infrastructure. Obviously, that would mean Marion, it would simplify things, one would think, by having Marion supply the bulk of the infrastructure, but is that right?
The infrastructure, or some of the, there will be some infrastructure on the site itself, but a lot of the infrastructure is actually outside the site, and in the road itself, the drainage and the road system. So they would still be in Holfast. It depends where you want to put the boundary, I guess. If it's halfway down the road, then you share the costs. But if it's on the boundary of the road, then the infrastructure will still be in Holfast Bay.
And just in relation to the haulage road, is it not actually signed off yet, the agreement?
It's complicated. It's pretty much signed off. It's just that I believe that there are a few conditions subject to, and one is that the DPA gets approved on one side, and then on the other side it's that the road gets finalised. So there's a bit on both sides. So it's pretty much, it's a strange situation, but one's holding the other one off. But everyone feels confident that it's okay.
Right. And for those that don't know, it's relevant to all of us really, but the deal is for the quarry haulage trucks to go south to the intersection of Majors and Lonsdale and proceed down Majors Road and then South Road, taking them off Lonsdale Highway, Brighton Road. And related to that, when Mr. Scull and I recently met the new Chief Executive of Department of Transport, we made quite an issue of Majors Road in particular, given some development at Glenthorne, the proposal to put BMX on Majors Road, the proposal to put a soccer facility on Majors Road, and the haulage trucks on Majors Road on the road that is already really quite uneven due to the, no doubt, due to the soil underneath. So that's just for your information. Any other questions in relation to the Seacliff DPA? Councillor Gard and then Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, through the Chair, for for that summary, Mr. Mulhirsch. Obviously, I'm sensitive, and I'm sure Councillor Crossan is most sensitive of the excitement in the Marino area. It's not all positive excitement, unfortunately, about this development and about the nature of the people who are currently our neighbours, not seen as very positive. However, what I was going to ask of management was, in a consultation as sensitive as this one, and I mean it in the sense that obviously major change to the area, but it's also one of those spots where local residents have to pass it by, and they will definitely, to the man, be affected by what happens there. There's not a lot of choice of access or egress, in other words. In that light, in the fact that it is that sensitive, is there a process that management would choose to go through as a preliminary to public consultation? In other words, to educate the locals on the various parameters of a consultation and what they should be dwelling upon, just to buy everybody time when the actual consultation process comes up, because...
I can just cut in there.
Enough.
Will it be in the old language a Category 3, which will need public notification?
This is a development plan amendment process. That Category 3 is
for an individual application.
Yeah, development.
So what? Sorry, I should have asked, what is the prescribed consultation process for a DPA?
It isn't a great deal, to be honest with you. Generally, it's an advert in the newspaper, whether it be the Messenger or the Advertiser, and the Government Gazette is pretty much all it, I believe, it says in the regulations. But what we have done or have been doing for years is actually going beyond that.
I suppose what Councillor Gard's suggesting, and certainly in line with our consultation in recent years, is to go well beyond that, and certainly to include everyone in the suburb of Marino, I would have thought, and probably Seacliff Park, Seacliff, that general area. Ms Dixon?
Through the Chair, the communications is key to this. It's of high public interest, and it's been a long-standing DPA as well. So the representations from our council, City of Holfast Bay, and the developers are meeting, and the communications strategy plan is, you know, a high important agenda item. What we also want to do is brief council on this project before we go out with any communications as well. So we'll seek to get some time on a forum if possible to brief members as well.
Thank you. Councillor Crossland.
Thank you. Maybe a difficult question to answer, but about 3.5-4 years ago, we were told this DPA was weeks away. I just wondered if you wanted another stab, maybe helping us out with a timeline.
Probably weeks away. No, it was a bit of an unknown a few years ago. The haulage road is the thing that has put it on the back burner for years now. Just trying to get an agreement between the two parties, you know, because there was design, there was money, etc., etc. But it has taken a long time, but I think we are that close now that we are pushing forward. And look, we're hoping that we can maybe put this out on public consultation in the middle of this year. We've only got until 31st of December this year to actually get it into the minister. That's the, I think, third time we've actually got an extension from the minister, mainly because he could see it's such a good strategic project. But we have been told that we have to get the thing, and particularly now that the new planning system's coming in. So we're under fairly strict timelines, and we're very much aware of that. And as Ms Dixon was saying, you know, we've got a strategy, and we're actually doing timelines for what needs to be done and when, and we're going through that at the moment. So we're hopeful. I think we feel quite confident that we'll actually have something finalised by the end of the year.
Yep, should be finished by Christmas 2020. So can we
We should get on to the motion now. Councillor Hull, you've got another question?
When are we going to submit to the Boundaries Adjustment Committee to actually formalise this patch?
There's a motion tonight. Council can decide if they wish to do that immediately after the DPA has gone through.
Right, so the DPA comes first.
We've had advice that we should wait for the DPA to be concluded.
Fair enough.
So can I have someone to move that clause one? Just a simple motion noting, Councillor Gard, seconded Councillor Pryor. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously, thank you. So let's press on to page 107, Mitchell Park Sports and Community Redevelopment Awareness Campaign. The idea is to generate some interest through publicity, postcards, a community rally and the like, so that we can maximise our chances of federal election partnership funding. And this is the price tag that our communications team has put on these efforts. Loosely based on the highly successful campaign around Oakland's crossing improvements, obviously a lower scale, but targeted to try and get the best result we can achieve. Councillor Hutchinson.
I just had a question, Your Worship. When staff formulated the amount, did that include internal time as well, or was it purely...
It doesn't include internal time, I'm sorry.
Just want to make sure we're all on... Yep.
Councillor Telfer to move.
Yes, I'd be proud to move this. I don't spend advertising money lightly. I had a much smaller amount in mind, but I was advised that half a job or half of Boothby is no job. So we need to advertise and get out and get our story told. There are a lot of people that drive past Quick Road and Bradley Grove, have never been into Mitchell Park Sports and Community Centre. They don't know that it's worn out. They don't know that we've got a great master plan. They don't know the half a dozen groups that are going to very much back this. So we are very keen that the community is aware of what council's doing and that it backs it right up to the deadline at the end of May.
Thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Hutchinson, anything to add? Anyone speaking against or question? Councillor Crossland?
I don't know whether this needs to be addressed to Mr. Clark, but is this too little too late? My understanding is that most of the federal pollies have already put out a list of what they are going to support and not support. And I just wonder, have we left it too late, and is this really wasting ratepayers' money?
Speaking for myself as a lobbyist on behalf of council, and only, I mean, in that capacity, I would say it's still money well spent, because there are a lot of election promises yet to be made and announced, and secondly, the landscape changes even as we get closer to the election, and the people who are deciding where millions are allocated are looking at the polling weekly, if not more often. And at this stage, Boothby is still the most marginal seat in South Australia. There's a bit of competition for that role now, in the seat of Sturt. But if things continue on the present course, Boothby remains the most exciting seat for this sort of partnership funding. So personally, I don't see it as redundant. Happy for Mr. Clark to comment. Thanks.
Through the Chair, I would echo the Mayor's remarks, but also add to it as well that the current numbers federally are about 53-47 in terms of the two-party preferred seats. As the election gets closer, you're going to find those numbers are going to narrow as well. So I think we're going to be a really good, strong position to be able to go out there and lobby for what we need. And if we don't do it and we don't get any money at all, then it's a waste opportunity, in my opinion.
I suppose it's, you know, it would be rather an ill feeling if we come back in June and say, oh, we actually didn't get any funding for that. Might have been different if we'd spent $22,000 to get somewhere between $5 and $10 million. But, you know, that's the proposition. Questions? Councillor Hull.
Look, Mr Clark may well be right that the current trajectory that the Liberals are on the margin might widen even more, given gaffe after gaffe coming out of Canberra. But look, I'd like to ask a serious question. In terms of the appeal to federal politicians, if the bucket of money is getting smaller, because there was a really big announcement on South Road only a couple of days ago, so that gives some credence to Mr Clark's theory that it's not too late. I accept that, because it was only, what, yesterday, the day before South Road was announced. So there is probably still time. But in terms of, you know, a bite-sized little projects, is it possible for us to actually put maybe two options to those politicians? One is the Mitchell Park Sports and Community Centre replacement as we know it, and then the super-sized version with the basketball.
So Councillor Hull, in a sense, we did that with a motion passed recently where we established that if certain amounts were received, then the indoor stadium would A, be built, and B, be bigger correspondingly if we received a larger amount. So that's on the books, and I do believe that federal members are aware of that.
Right, OK. So there's some options available to them.
Yes.
OK, well, that being the case, there's no need for me to speak because I can't.
No, well, it's been moved. It hasn't yet been seconded. It has, sorry, by Councillor Hutchinson. So is anyone speaking against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority. Thank you. Now we go on to page 108, Youth Advisory Committee. Councillor Schilling to move.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yep, I would like to move this as written. Obviously, I've written it. I've read the staff notes that have been given to me, well, they've been given to all of us in our report, and asked some questions today regarding the several groups that they've mentioned in there. And it was really interesting to think, to get the results. So the YMCA camps have only been run twice, 2016-17 and 17-18, with a total of 45 people being involved, and I couldn't get a total amount of how many people from the City of Marion were involved. And so the answer that I got was that it was from people that work in the area, reside in the area, have leisure here. They might not live here in particular. And the CV Downs High School was a program that was a school-based program that the City of Marion was invited to join. But part of me goes, what about the other schools? We've got a large number of schools within our area, and those youth didn't get to be heard either. Once upon a time, Marion did have a thriving youth advisory committee. I was a member of that committee from late 2009 to 2012, and reported to council on numerous occasions about different things that were affecting youth. And I thought we were quite a vibrant bunch with broad experience from 12 to 25. I left the group at a point when I was the only person over the age of 18 and everyone else was 13 years of age. So for me, it was like, yeah, it's time to go. So I left and watched the group slowly decline. But I think there is a way that council can re-establish the group to be a forthcoming, vibrant group. There are councils that have some very workable models. Campbelltown, for instance, have an application-based, interview-based model that I think we could implement quite well here. And this motion tonight, it's not committing us to re-establishing the group. It's just asking for a report on history, costings, and potential models. And I think it's a bit of a no-brainer to just see what the report comes back. If the report comes back and says it's not viable, fine. But I think it's worth looking into. I've had some good conversations today with Ms. Byrne, and I'm going to meet with her and the team to discuss youth development as well. But I think just asking for a report on re-establishing the YAC would be a great step forward in helping youth. I think the other big thing is that currently we put a lot of effort on social media and devices, and that's where my generation and younger are using, but people don't have that one-on-one conversation anymore, and having a youth advisory committee would bring youth off their devices, out of their homes, into a room with 15 other people and actually have a one-on-one conversation with someone, something that's not happening. Sure does.
Thank you, Your Worship. I think this is a very worthy motion indeed. The least we can do is look into it. The young do need to speak with a louder voice. I recall vividly being 5 years, I wish it had been more, in the Association of APEX when you were booted out at 40. And those sorts of organisations, young men's service clubs, which became young men's and women's service clubs, were a wonderful part of our society. So anything to replace or partly replace structures like that, to me, is extremely worthy. I really hope it gets a good airing.
Anyone speaking against?
Question.
Question, Councillor Hull.
Will there be terms of reference drawn up for such a committee? Or does one exist already? Because we've had a YAC before. Because where I'm going with this, Mr. Mayor, is that I don't want to see party politics appear again in our YAC.
Councillor, I think the answer to that is this motion calls for a report. So if you have a view about what the terms of reference should be, and if Council does want to proceed with establishing a YAC, then you'll have the opportunity to put some constraints on that. In terms of what the old terms of reference were, I'm sure they can be made available to you.
Well, it's just that university unions are rife with party politics.
Yep.
It's not the only opportunity where party politics permeates good things. And I wouldn't like to see the YAC, as much as I support this, I do strongly want to make it known that I think it's abhorrent for party politics it's not a training ground.
Councillor, we have the rule of people speaking in favour and then against for a reason. It's so that we don't have 13 people all speaking furiously in agreement. If you're supporting the motion, then I'll just see if there's checking if there's anyone who's against it. Councillor Crossland.
Look, I'll speak against, not because, I mean, people know I'm a youth ambassador, but I wasn't keen on the makeup of the YAC, and I didn't find what they said useful. Most of us, I'm guessing, have some form of school in their own backyard where they can be consulted at any time, just like our residence groups, seniors groups, we have schools. I met with the executive student group from Hallett Cove Art 7 only a week ago. It was really interesting to put the questions of the Seapool, Capella, to that group of students that actually know the area and use the area daily, rather than have a couple of students represent one from each school to give a generic speech, which is, in my view, as Councillor Hull has alluded to, sort of politically motivated for not what we wanted, but for other topics that someone else wanted to bring forward. So I would like to see all elected members maybe go and speak to their own constituents and have that as a regular meeting, and maybe be proactive rather than wait for staff to actually go and force young people to come and talk to them.
Yes, I don't think it'll be the press gang approach, but Councillor Valescu?
Is this something we could explore through the youth grants? Because you've got youth grants for people who are interested in skateboarding and things like that. We've got youth grants for people in drama. Why don't we have some youth grants? And it could be that we forfeit some of the costs in staff. If they're interested in representation and keeping it apolitical, that they have that opportunity. So you're building that interest and that skill.
Strictly speaking, it wouldn't be consistent with the youth grant program that we have, because that's where we ask external parties to ask us for money, and then they go and do projects rather than ongoing participation projects like this. But I'll ask staff if there's anything to add to that.
Councillor Vasco, the report notes that at the moment the youth grants provide leadership for our youth, leadership development opportunities, and through that we are getting some forms of feedback from youth, including through the acquittal process and through the grants that are given out. I think what Councillor Schilling is suggesting with a feasibility study of a broader consultative process and feedback process isn't currently being achieved like he wishes through the grants.
Well, really, you've already spoken, Councillor Crossland. Have to be consistent with that. So are there any other contributors? I'll give Councillor Schilling the right of reply to close the debate. Thanks.
Thank you, Your Worship. I understand people's concerns, especially Councillor Hull's, about politicising it. At this point, it's just a report. I understand where Councillor Hull is coming from. I never joined YAC to politicise anything or for a future career or anything like that. I joined to actually have my voice heard and to be heard by councillors. And that's where I would like a future YAC to go. And I totally agree with the terms of reference and having that put in place. And Mr. Lyons has basically summarised my feelings in a way that I couldn't. So appreciate that. Thank you.
Put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, carried by a majority. Thank you.